We're going to be reading from Genesis chapter 21 on page 15 of the church Bibles. Genesis chapter 21. The Lord visited Sarah, as he had said, and the Lord did to Sarah as he had promised. And Sarah conceived and bore Abraham a son in his old age, at the time of which God had spoken to him. Abraham called the name of his son, who was born to him, whom Sarah bore him, Isaac. And Abraham circumcised his son Isaac when he was 8 days old, as God had commanded him. Abraham was 100 years old when his son Isaac was born to him. And Sarah said, God has made laughter for me. Everyone who hears will laugh over me. And she said, who would have said to Abraham that Sarah would nurse children? Yet I have borne him a son in his old age. And the child grew and was weaned. And Abraham made a great feast on the day that Isaac was weaned. But Sarah saw the son of Hagar the Egyptian, whom she had borne to Abraham, laughing. So she said to Abraham, cast out the slave woman with her son, for the son of the slave woman shall not be heir with my son Isaac. And the thing was very displeasing to Abraham on account of his son. But God said to Abraham, be not displeased because of the boy and because of your slave woman. Whatever Sarah says to you, do as she tells you. For through Isaac shall your offspring be named. And I will make a nation of the son of the slave woman also, because he is your offspring. So Abraham rose early in the morning and took bread and a skin of water and gave it to Hagar, putting it on her shoulder along with the child, and sent her away. And she departed and wandered into the wilderness of Beersheba. When the water in the skin was gone, she put the child under one of the bushes. Then she went and sat down opposite him a good way off, about the distance of a bow shot, for she said, let me not look on the death of the child. And as she sat opposite him, she lifted up her voice and wept. And God heard the voice of the boy, and the angel of God called to Hagar from heaven and said to her, what troubles you, Hagar? Fear not, for God has heard the voice of the boy where he is. Up. Lift up the boy, and hold him fast with your hand, for I will make him into a great nation. Then God opened her eyes, and she saw a well of water. And she went and filled the skin with water, and gave the boy a drink. And God was with the boy, and he grew up. He lived in the wilderness, and became an expert with the bow. He lived in the wilderness of Paran, and his mother took a wife for him from the land of Egypt. At that time, Abimelech and Pichol, the commander of his army, said to Abraham, God is with you in all that you do. Now therefore, swear to me here by God that you will not deal falsely with me, or with my descendants, or with my posterity. But as I have dealt kindly with you, so you will deal with me, and with the land where you have sojourned. And Abraham said, I will swear. When Abraham reproved Abimelech about a well of water that Abimelech's servants had seized, Abimelech said, I do not know who has done this thing. You did not tell me, and I have not heard of it until today. So Abraham took sheep and oxen and gave them to Abimelech, and the two men made a covenant. Abraham set 7 ewe lambs of the flock apart, and Abimelech said to Abraham, what is the meaning of these 7 ewe lambs that you have set apart? He said, these 7 ewe lambs you will take from my hand, that this may be a witness for me that I dug this well. Therefore, that place was called Beersheba, because there both of them swore an oath. So they made a covenant at Beersheba. Then Abimelech and Pichol, the commander of his army, rose up and returned to the land of the Philistines. Abraham planted a tamarisk tree in Beersheba and called there on the name of the Lord, the everlasting God. And Abraham sojourned many days in the land of the Philistines.
Thanks for reading for us, James. My name's Mark, and I'm a member of the church family here at Euston. May I add my welcome to Kev's welcome earlier? It's great to see you here. I'm married to Bryony, and we have a little boy called Alex, Alexander in full. We spent a lot of time choosing his name. I went through a book of baby names and ticked the names I liked. I wrote them down. Bryony then ticked the ones she liked. I say the ones she liked. She actually only ticked one name. probably because the other names I selected included Marmaduke, Blaze, and Horatio. And that's how our son got his name. We didn't think much about what Alexander means, but lots of people do. Alexander apparently means helper of mankind, which seems particularly unlikely at nappy change time. In today's passage, we meet a baby called Isaac. His name means he laughs. Perhaps his parents thought that he would grow up to be a stand-up comedian doing the tent circuit between Haran and Kadesh. But look closer at the passage, and you will see that Isaac's name is born out of the circumstances of his parents. Verse 6. And Sarah said, God has made laughter for me. Everyone who hears will laugh over me. Sarah is laughing, and the world is laughing with her. She's laughing because she and Abraham are far too old to have a child, but God miraculously provides one for them anyway. We know from Genesis 17 that Sarah is around 90 at the time of Isaac's birth. And Abraham is, verse 5, 100. The NHS calls a woman who gives birth at 35 plus geriatric. Goodness knows what they would call Sarah. The passage emphasizes time and again just how old Sarah and Abraham are. Sarah can scarcely believe it's possible that they have a child between them. Listen to her in verse 7. Who would have said to Abraham that Sarah would nurse children? Yet I have borne him a son in his old age. The baby is a medical miracle, but his significance is even greater than that in the immediate context of Genesis. If you haven't been here over the last few weeks, here's a quick reminder of the story so far. Abraham is living in Haran when God speaks to him and makes amazing promises to give him land, to make him into a great nation, and to bless all of the families of the earth through him. God later repeats his promise to Abraham and says that Abraham will have innumerable descendants. Abraham asks God how he'll manage to fulfill that promise, given that Abraham and Sarah are childless. God promises, though, that Abraham and Sarah will have their own child. Abraham and Sarah take things into their own hands. Abraham has sex with Hagar, Sarah's servant, at Sarah's insistence, so that Abraham can have a child. But God tells Abraham that that child, Ishmael, is not the child that he promised. Even though Abraham is by this time 99 and Sarah just over 90, God repeats his promise that Sarah will bear Abraham a son to be called Isaac. God says about Isaac, I will establish my covenant with him as an everlasting covenant for his offspring after him. God's covenant is a posh word to describe the agreement between God and his people, setting out how God will deliver his promises. So in other words, God says that the promises that he made to Abraham are going to be fulfilled through Isaac and his descendants. Back to today's passage, we see the birth of that miracle child, Isaac. And today's passage is told through the story of those two children, Isaac and Ishmael, and the king, King Abimelech. The main points from today's passage should be on the screen behind me. Let's dive into our first point. The joyful blessings of the covenant are only available through God's chosen one. We've already seen that Sarah laughs when Isaac is born. In part, she laughs because she can't quite believe that this ancient couple have a baby between them. but it is also joyful laughter as she sees how God has blessed her and Abraham in the most unlikely of circumstances. We've seen Sarah laugh before. Back in chapter 18, we saw her laugh with disbelief as God told Abraham that Sarah would bear a son. That laugh has been replaced with a laugh of joy. She no longer disbelieves God's promises because she has seen the evidence with her own eyes of a miracle that only God could have made. No human scientific progress, even to this day, has allowed a man and a woman the age of Abraham and Sarah to have a child. The child can only have been born by the hand of God. Sarah can now clearly see that the Lord is the great reverser of fortunes, and he does what he says. Look down with me at verse 1. The Lord visited Sarah as he had said, and the Lord did to Sarah as he had promised. And so Sarah rejoices in God's promises fulfilled. But this unconfined joy only comes when the Lord fulfills his promises through his chosen one. We're given a powerful reminder in verse 8 of what happens when man tries to take it into his own hands to fulfill God's promises. In the circumcision of Isaac, we are reminded of the time when Abraham listened to the voice of Sarah instead of to God's voice and sought a son by having sex with Sarah's servant Hagar. God only gave the sign of circumcision to Abraham after he had done that. Yes, circumcision is a sign of obedience to God's covenant, but it is also a physical reminder of how Abraham sought wrongly to fulfill God's promises through human effort. One of the key lessons of Genesis is that God has chosen to gather his people together through humanly impossible, supernatural means. And so Abraham learns through this episode to have faith in the means that God has provided to fulfill his covenant. That is, through his chosen one. There is no other way in which God will fulfill his covenant. The New Testament talks about this passage in the book of Galatians. The big issue in Galatians is whether a person is justified by works of the law, that is, human effort, or by faith in Jesus Christ. In Galatians 4, verses 21 to 28, the Apostle Paul uses Genesis 21 to support his argument that a person is justified solely by faith in God's chosen one, Jesus Christ. Paul describes Ishmael as a child of the flesh, trapped in slavery. Ishmael represents human effort and endeavor. Genesis makes clear that human effort will never be enough to earn God's covenant blessing, and so those who try are doomed to failure, enslaved by their wrong understanding. Isaac, on the other hand, is a child of promise and free. The birth of Isaac shows the joy of trusting in God's promises through his chosen one. So the only way into God's covenant is through God's chosen one. It follows that if you reject God's chosen one, you reject God's covenant. That's why Ishmael's not part of the covenant. We're on to our second point now. Those who reject God's chosen one are outside of the covenant. And it is clear that Ishmael does reject Isaac, God's chosen one. In our story, laughing Isaac is beginning to grow up. Verse 8. And the child grew and was weaned. And Abraham made a great feast on the day that Isaac was weaned. I don't know if you know what weaning is. I didn't until we had baby Alex. Weaning is when a baby starts to move from surviving on just milk to starting to eat solid food. It's an exciting time. In fact, Abraham is so excited that he throws a feast to celebrate. We were certainly excited when we weaned Alex. That excitement didn't last for long, though, because at about the same time as Alex learned to eat, he learned to throw. And very soon, our kitchen walls were redecorated with whatever foodstuffs Alex was trying to eat that day. Abraham may be excited about the weaning of Isaac, but Ishmael is not. Look down with me at verse 9. But Sarah saw the son of Hagar, the Egyptian, whom she had borne to Abraham, laughing. More laughter. But this time, it's not joyful laughter. The footnote suggests that it's mocking laughter. Again, Paul in Galatians helps to give us a bit of insight as to what's going on here. Galatians 4:29. He who was born according to the flesh persecuted him who was born of the Spirit. There's jealousy in Ishmael's reaction. He sees all of the attention being lavished on Isaac, and he doesn't like it. Why is Abraham throwing this lavish feast for this crying, whinging baby? Suddenly, all of Abraham's attention has switched from Ishmael to Isaac. So Ishmael mocks Isaac. Oh, it's easy for Ishmael to mock a helpless baby with his ancient parents hobbling after him. It doesn't look like a very good basis for establishing an everlasting covenant. Surely the better bet is Ishmael. He's about 14, already established, and has a mother who's still young. And Ishmael was born as the result of humans trying to do the right thing and making an effort. Surely Ishmael is the one who Abraham should be throwing a feast for, not Isaac. God's chosen one looks weak here, and so it's tempting to try to rely on something else or someone else for covenant blessing to be fulfilled. That's what was going on in that Galatian passage that we looked at earlier, when people wanted to rely on their own good works there for salvation, rather than receiving salvation by God's chosen one, Jesus. But that's not God's way of fulfilling his promises. His covenant is only fulfilled through faith in his promises, through his chosen one. There are serious consequences for Ishmael in rejecting God's chosen one. When Sarah says to Abraham, verse 9, cast out this slave woman with her son, for the son of the slave woman shall not be heir with my son Isaac, that might seem harsh or said in ill temper. But God agrees with her, verse 12. But God said to Abraham, be not displeased because of the boy and because of your slave woman. Whatever Sarah says to you, do as she tells you, for through Isaac shall your offspring be named. The terrible news for Ishmael is that if you reject God's chosen one, you reject God's covenant. And you are outside God's covenant blessing. This passage gives us a physical picture of what it's like to be outside God's covenant. We see the tragic consequences of Ishmael having rejected God's chosen one. He is cast out, and verse 14, forced to wander around in the wilderness of Beersheba. At one point, as the water comes out, it even looks like Ishmael will die in the wilderness. Awful. It looks for all the world as if God has given up on Ishmael. But God has not abandoned him. He still has hope. We're on to our third point now. In God's grace, covenant blessing is available to the undeserving outsider who humbles himself before God's chosen one. In the teeth of opposition towards God's chosen one from Israel, God treats him in a way that his mocking behavior does not deserve. Verse 17. And God heard the voice of the boy and the angel, And the angel of God called to Hagar from heaven and said to her, "What troubles you, Hagar? Feel not, for God has heard the voice of the boy where he is. Lift up the boy and hold him fast with your hand, for I will make him into a great nation." Then God opened her eyes, and she saw a well of water. And she went and filled the skin with water and gave the boy a drink. God hears the boy. He sees his distress. Ishmael's completely helpless without God's sovereign hand. God hears his voice and provides a well of water for him to drink. You see God's tender compassion towards Hagar as he notices her distress and tells her not to fear. The voice of a loving, caring father reaching out in his mercy. And what he promises Hagar is extraordinary. I will make Ishmael into a great nation. Remember that Ishmael opposed God's chosen one. And yet God is prepared to lavish him with generosity. God's amazing grace here in Genesis acts as a blueprint for the rest of the Bible. I'm sure you'll have noticed how many times today's passage refers to the slave woman or the son of the slave woman and the wilderness. Those repeated words help us make the link established between the principles in this passage and the Bible story as a whole. In Genesis 37, Joseph is thrown into a pit in the wilderness and handed over to, funnily enough, the Ishmaelites, who sell him into slavery in Egypt. God miraculously rescues Joseph from slavery, and he becomes the second in command to Pharaoh in Egypt. Similarly, in Exodus, the Israelites are in slavery in Egypt. Just as he heard Ishmael's cry, God hears their distress, brings them out through the wilderness to the promised land, and like Ishmael, makes them into a great nation. But the Israelites are often undeserving of God's kindness. They distrust God's promises and his chosen leader, and at one point, they even make a golden calf in wanton rebellion against God. And yet, time and again, God shows his kindness to them. Jesus follows this pattern. He says, "Love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you." Even as he hangs on a Roman cross, Jesus' only utterances are to hold out life to those who hate him. "Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do," he says. Even though Ishmael is outside of the covenant and has rejected God's chosen one, the fact that God treats Ishmael kindly shows that the door to the covenant has not been slammed shut on him. In fact, the remainder of the passage shows that God has made a way that, if Ishmael accepts it, would bring him into the joy of covenant relationship with the Lord. The relationship between Abraham and Abimelech shows how God has made that way. Last week we saw God keep Abimelech from violating Sarah after Abraham had misled him into thinking that Sarah was Abraham's sister. Abimelech even ended up giving gifts of livestock and servants to Abraham. And at the end of today's passage, Abraham has done even better because he owns a well. Based on my son's love for splashing in puddles on the way to nursery, I think he'd love to own a well, an almost unlimited supply of water in which he could splash around. But there's good reason for Abraham to love owning a well too. In the Old Testament, possession of a well meant that you owned all of the land around it. Abraham's ownership of the well is surprising because Beersheba, verse 34, is in the land of the Philistines, and Abimelech is its king. You'd expect Abimelech, at very least, to ask Abraham to leave. After all, Abraham has come into his land, not the other way round, and the ownership of the well is disputed. When Abraham and Abimelech meet, verse 22, Abimelech has with him the commander of his army, Phicol. So he has the military might to defeat Abraham. But Abimelech hasn't come to fight Abraham. He has come to make peace with him. Look down with me at verse 22. At that time, Abimelech and Phicol, the commander of the army, said to Abraham, God is with you in all that you do. Abimelech has understood that God has a unique relationship with Abraham and that all covenant blessings flow through him and Isaac. It's what Ishmael failed to understand earlier in the passage. You see, Abimelech is seeking covenant blessing through Abraham. Verse 23. Now, therefore, swear to me here by God that you will not deal falsely with me or my descendants or with my posterity, but as I have dealt kindly with you, so you will deal with me and with the land where you have sojourned. He sees that Abraham has God's favor and so seeks to be part of God's favored people by association with Abraham. It must have been a big thing for a man as powerful and used to getting his own way as Abimelech to humble himself before Abraham. Abraham swears that he will do as Abimelech has asked, verse 24, and there is peace between them. The author emphasizes that the relationship between them now is a covenant relationship. Verse 27, the two men made a covenant. Verse 31, therefore that place was called Beersheba, because there both of them swore an oath. So they made a covenant at Beersheba. Even Abraham's payment of 7 ewe lambs in verse 29 is a Hebrew wordplay because it sounds like the word for swear or oath. It's clear that Abimelech is now part of God's covenant through his relationship with Abraham. In that sense, Abraham foreshadows Jesus. Just as covenant blessing flows only through Abraham and his seed in Genesis, covenant blessing now only flows through the Lord Jesus. But while covenant blessing has an exclusive source, it is inclusive because it is available to everyone. Abimelech was a foreigner. You wouldn't expect him to be able to take advantage of covenant blessing, but Abraham opens it up to him. All he has to do is humble himself before Abraham to receive blessing. The kindness that God shows to those outside of his covenant extends to wanting to bring them into his covenant. It's why there's still hope for Ishmael. It's why there's still hope for everyone. In these last few minutes, I want to start to look in a bit more detail about how this passage applies to us. It would be great if we could carry on talking about those things in food afterwards. When was the last time you laughed with joy as you saw God fulfilling his covenant promises? Just as Sarah and Abraham delight in the way that God has fulfilled his promises to them through the birth of their medically impossible baby Isaac, we too should delight in the way that God has fulfilled his promises to us and blessed us through his chosen one in the most unlikely of circumstances. It seemed impossible that we could be brought into relationship with God because we're too sinful to have a relationship with God. God, though, delights in making the impossible possible. Jesus was a miracle baby too, conceived by God's will. He died in our place so that we could have relationship with God. And God then raised Jesus to life again so that we could have eternal life through him. Do you ever stop to think about how amazing it is that God has consistently made the impossible possible through his chosen one? You dwell on that and feel the joy of what he's done for you. If you've never done that, may I urge you to read one of the eyewitness accounts of the life of Jesus and see how this amazing promise of covenant blessing is open to you. God with you in all that you do. Come to God's chosen one and receive the joy of covenant blessing. Amid all this joy, though, I wonder if there are people to whom we think God's covenant blessing should be closed. How would you feel if the person who bullied you for years at school for being a Christian came to God's chosen one for covenant blessing? You might feel deeply hurt and angry that God would choose to bless them. Theo gave us some really helpful examples last week of not giving up on the nations. After all, they could be more righteous than you. But this passage takes it further. God doesn't give up on people who are very considerably less righteous than him, or even us. And neither should we. Remember God's kindness to Ishmael after he mocked Isaac. Remember God's kindness to Israel in bringing them to the promised land after they grumbled against him and despised him. And remember his kindness to us in bringing us back into relationship with him and forgiving our sin. Will you continue to hold the gospel out to those who don't deserve it? Will you pray that they would be brought into the joy of covenant relationship with God? Remember, God's covenant blessing is open to all who come to Jesus to receive it. And if you're someone who doesn't think they deserve God's covenant blessing, remember that God's covenant blessing was made for people like you. Finally, are you too proud to humble yourself before Jesus to receive covenant blessing? I doubt there'd be many of us here who would say that covenant blessing relies on our own works. But I wonder if we sometimes functionally act like it. Do you get a warm, fuzzy glow of achievement when you've been to your Bible study? Do you think that God is thrilled by your goodness as you've managed to pray to him 14 days in a row? If so, the message of this passage is, be careful. It's all too easy to turn Christianity into an exercise of assessing how good you've been. In other words, functionally relying on human effort for your standing before God. If that's you, and it's often me, then we need to remember that covenant blessing does not come through anything that we've done. It comes by humbling ourselves before Jesus, by making ourselves subordinate to him. And the more we understand how incomparable what Jesus has done for us is compared to what we have tried and failed to do for him, the easier we'll find it to do that.